You're listening to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Good afternoon. Welcome to part two of our Saturday soiree. Thanks so much for being with us. Pamela Powers Hanley is with us, a progressive candidate and legislative representative from Legislative District 9, my legislative district. She's one of the most respected lawmakers in Arizona, and she joins us now. Pam, welcome to the show. I'm glad you could join us. Thank you.
Well, thanks for inviting me, John.
Well, listen, I was reading on Facebook, and you bring up some legitimate points about our city council. I wanted people to hear what you had to say about it. You've heard more about the GPLET, G-P-E-L-E-T. You might tell me what that is. It's the G-P-L-E-T.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes. Yes, the GPLET, as it's called down here in southern Arizona, or the GIBLET with a B, as they call it in Phoenix. I guess they can't spell, right?
So they can't spell, yeah.
GPLET is Government Property Lease Excise Tax, and it's a type of tax break for developers that's been used in Arizona for many years. I mean, I think that it was first passed in the legislature like in the 1990s. And so basically it allows people who, while they're building a building, while they're building this, like a new hotel or an apartment building or a new restaurant, while they're building it, they get to pay, they don't pay their property tax. They pay a fee to the city, but they don't pay their property tax. And so it's supposed to help them get off the ground while they have all these expenses. And then at the end of the GPLET time period, then they go back to paying their regular, you know, full freight, right? So initially, GPLETs were forever. They got the tax break forever. And apparently, I don't think that Tucson was in the GPLET business when the forever ones were around. We jumped in the game when there were 25-year GPLETs. And so in Tucson, and you'll see people who have like a 25-year property tax rebate. I mean, you know, they don't have to pay it for 25 years. And then the newer ones are for 8 years. And so the legislature first passed them, it was forever. And then in 2011, it was a bipartisan vote to make it 25 years. And then in 2017, with two odd bedfellows, Vince Leach and I leading the charge to take it down to 8 years in 2017. So I think it's a good idea to help people get started, but it doesn't have to go forever.
By the way, you said you searched multiple ways on the city's website to find out the agenda about these particular tax breaks. You got agendas from 2006, 2010, nothing recent except watch from the last meeting. And this is what you got when you added specific dates. The city administration makes government more transparent, not in this particular case. And tell me.
Exactly. So I did finally find what I was looking for when I looked on the computer. But, you know, a lot of people, their first go-to device is a smartphone or a tablet to try to find things. And so the site, or at least that part of the site, is not optimized for mobile. So I did eventually find the agenda. And what got me started on this was I had a constituent meeting the other day. Somebody came into the office, met me downtown at the state building, and she was with the Tucson Residents for Responsible Government. And she had made this appointment weeks ago, right? But she just happened to mention all the GPLETs that were on the Tuesday agenda for the mayor and council meeting. I said, what? You know, because I had not heard about it. And so it was our conversation that got me looking around, and she sure was right. There's several, not just GPLET deals that are going to be discussed and potentially voted on September 17, but also two executive sessions, in one about the Ronstadt Center development and one about some sort of deal with the university and the city about part of Randolph Golf Course. Nobody seems to know what that's about. So there's a lot going on, and there's not a lot of information.
You know, there's talk, of course, of taking the frontage part of Randolph Golf Course, which is along Broadway across from Elkhorn, and turning that into a commercial property, that whole strip along there. I don't know whether that's what they're talking about, but we don't know what they're talking about because there's no way to find out, I don't think. You point out a very interesting point here that we do a lot of city business when it comes to these tax deals for developers behind closed doors, and nobody knows what the hell is going on.
Right, right. And that what you're talking about with that part on Broadway, they said Randolph North, so that would be the northern part of Randolph Park. I mean, I agree with the movement a few years ago to expand Reed Park, you know, and take the golf course and make it a bigger park. We already don't have enough open spaces or public spaces in this town. Why don't we do that? I mean, it would be well used. I mean, if you go to that Reed Park walking path at any time of the day or night, somebody's out there riding their bike or pushing a stroller or talking to their friends. And it's like, we need more of that as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and these golf courses lose money, and the city's been pretty, I think, irresponsible in telling us how much money they do lose. And they lose a lot. You know, we just had too many golf courses and not enough golfers. And, you know, it's come down to a situation where the city's going to have to make some very tough choices about whether we can afford the golf courses we have. It's simple as that. And for the most part, we can't, you know, for that matter. We can't continue to subsidize these people. And they're losing money hand over fist. So, you know, that may not make golfers very happy, but it might make taxpayers a little more happy about that. And you're right. That is a great green space in the heart of our town. And the expansion to a park through the north and south courses on that property would be absolutely incredible right in the very heart of the city. I can't imagine.
Yeah, it would be great. I mean, and, you know, look at the neighborhoods that are around there. Those are, you know, middle class and some of them lower, you know, lower income neighborhoods. It would be amazing to have that space right there, you know, for them to go and be outside and, you know, get out of an apartment, you know, and stuff like that. So I just think that that's the way to use Reed Park and that Randolph Golf Course rather than, you know, some sort of development. We got plenty of development.
For about a year, I lived just
One thing I wanted to follow up on, the GPUT, I did do a blog post for Blog for Arizona about this that has a little more detail about what's being proposed. And one of the things that's also on the docket for at least discussion, if not a vote on Tuesday, is the a GPLET for the Maloney's site on 4th Avenue, where they're going to build that another big apartment complex.
Really?
Yes. And I was surprised to see that because I thought that wasn't going to get one. And I tipped off the Save 4th Avenue people, and they're like, what?
Yeah.
They didn't know, you know. So there's a lot happening. It's another one of these agendas. It's 20 items long. It's also got Tobacco 21 on it, which is going to bring people out, too, you know?
Yes, absolutely. You know, people don't realize how powerful the city government is and how many millions and millions of dollars pass through their decision-making process almost on a weekly basis. And this is another one of those weeks where it's going to be in the millions of dollars.
Yeah, it's going to be in the millions, and it's going to go on into the future. See, that's one of my things is that ever since I've been in the legislature, I've said, I want to see the spreadsheet, you know, I want to see the list of the projects, you know, who got the money, how much they got, what did they build, what did they say they were going to build, what did they build, what did we get, did we make any money, and how long is it going to continue? Because they're all over the map, you know, there's 8 years and there's 25 years and then these other things are laid on top and then they're excusing fees. I mean, if you look at that part of my blog post where it lists the giblets, you can click on them and you can see the deals. And you can see the deals are kind of all over the place. But, you know, I still want to know, I mean, how much we're losing into the future because we're excusing future revenue with these, you know, and we're excusing property taxes. And the county and the school districts are the ones who rely on property taxes. So we really need to watch out what we're doing. We don't want to, you know, rob Peter to pay Paul on these things.
Again, explain, if you will, what the legislature has done to control these particular tax giveaways. What have you done? What does it say now in the law?
Yeah, for the giblet now, the law that was passed in 2017, it says that they can do this property tax deals with businesses. Cities can do these in their central business district, but only for 8 years. So, like, I heard that Randy Dorman just got one for a project in West University. So she's got that giblet that she doesn't have to pay the property taxes on that, even as it appreciates. Remember, once she develops it, it's going to be worth more. Even after it appreciates, she doesn't have to pay more property tax or any for 8 years.
Wow.
And then afterwards, that should go back to normal. But there's also deals where some of these buildings have they're on city land, like the Ronstadt Center. That's city land. So if we develop the Ronstadt Center, then whoever does that, they don't pay any property tax because it's city land. And they're going to get other deals. They're going to get a Rio Nuevo deal for it. So it's like, it's mind-boggling and super complicated, John.
Well, by the way, that Ronstadt Transit Center's got federal requirements as well.
Yes, yes. And that has not entirely gone through on the federal level, is what I understand.
Yes, that's right. So I don't know how that's going to unfold. I really have no idea.
I know.
Well, it's amazing. Let me ask you.
We're talking about it on Tuesday afternoon.
Well, that's right, Tuesday. By the way, that agenda, is there any requirement the city has to publish that to previous to a decision-making like this? I mean, isn't there it has to be published someplace, right?
Well, maybe not. It's on the website.
That's it.
On the website. You can get to it from a regular computer. I couldn't locate it on a smartphone or a tablet, but I got to it on the regular computer. It does come up. And so, yes, it's there. But, you know, since there's so many writers who have been laid off at the Arizona Daily Star, we don't have dedicated reporters to tell us what's going on, you know?
That's really too bad
You know, you have to rely on grassroots activists who are trying to dig through this stuff, you know?
What else have you been involved in? I got about a couple of minutes. You can fill us in on how active you've been in perhaps another arena. What have you been doing?
Oh, my gosh. I had a really busy weekend. You know, one of the most interesting things I did was I participated in an Arizona town hall down at the Whetstone unit of the state prison on Wilmont.
Wow.
And that was an eye-opener. This was the Arizona town hall is a group that they pick a topic for the year, and then they hold these town halls around the state. And they're doing two in prisons this year, and I got the opportunity to go into this. Their topic for this year is strong families, thriving children. So my big issues this year is maternal and child health. And I thought, well, what better opportunity than to go and talk to some prisoners, right? And so we know that, you know, toxic stress for children when they're young and, you know, not having opportunities, not having food, not having a safe roof over them, all those things, you know, create toxic stress in a small child. And so it was really something to talk to these guys. And so we were in an activity room, and there was about 100 people. It was 20 people from, like me, from the outside. I was the only elected official there. And then there was about 80 prisoners and then some guards, you know. But it was fascinating. It was really fascinating to talk with them about their lives and to talk with them about their connections with their children, what they thought about the criminal justice system, you know, and how it's really difficult for these prisoners to stay connected with their families because, and that will help them out. That'll help their psyche, you know, and it'll help their families. The prison system doesn't pay any attention to where you were arrested, where you lived, and where you are stuck, right? So there, I met some woman whose husband had a low-level drug charge. Met a lot of people with low-level drug charges. And he's up in Kingman, and it costs her $500 to go up and visit him because she's got to get a hotel room, right? And,
wow.
And gas,
yeah,
and stuff like that. There was one young guy from Washington State there. And remember, several years we had Hawaiians in Arizona. Why are we doing that?
Money. It was for the money.
It's difficult for them to make phone calls. I mean, there's no clemency. I mean, there's just a whole list of problems with the criminal justice system.
Well, thanks to your hard work, we know more about it than we would have had you not taken, obviously, the time to go hear what these folks had to say. That's why you're one of the best lawmakers we've ever known, and we really appreciate you being on the show. And it's always great to talk with you, Pam. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Oh, wait a minute.
Well, thank you so much, and let's for a blog post about the prison.
Yeah, Ingrid's on our phone lines. Let's go to Ingrid and see if she has a question for you. Ingrid, you're with Pamela Powers Hanley.
Hi. Where in the Tucson governing documents or any city's governing documents in the area does it say that you can get out of paying property taxes? Where are these decisions being made? Are they being made privately? Are these meetings being announced? This sounds entirely illegal to me, grossly unfair. I have to pay my property taxes whether it's a burden or not. A lot of people are losing their homes because they can't afford taxes. I'll hang up. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I agree with you completely, Ingrid. And in fact, on the blog post that I put up on Blog for Arizona, down at the bottom, it explains the different types of deals that the city can make. But on top of what the city's doing for tax breaks, the county's doing tax breaks, the state, the federal government, Rio Nuevo, there's levels. This is why companies like Amazon don't pay any taxes, right? Because they're given tax break upon tax break. And so it's totally not fair. And in fact, I forgot a part of the constituent story from earlier. One of her points was that now the city is going back to some residents and saying, hey, if you want your streets fixed, maybe you could voluntarily tax yourself some more to pay for your streets. And she's saying, why should I pay more for my streets when I already pay my taxes? I voted for the bond issue to fix the streets, and you're giving the money away, you know? And I totally agree with her.
Good point. Thanks, Pamela. It's great to talk with you. Thank you so very much for your hard work. Thank you.
All right. Talk to you later, John.
Yeah, man. Pamela Powers Hanley, a progressive lawmaker from Legislative District 9. We are so proud of her. That's why we keep reelecting her over and over and over again. We'll be back in a moment with Keith Rosenblum, our Mexico reporter. That's coming up on the John C. Scott Saturday edition. This portion of the John C. Scott Show originates from Perfection Auto Work Studios. Thanks for being with us. With us is Keith Rosenblum, who's covered Mexico politics for us for 30 years or plus. And we always try to check in with Keith to find out what's going on at the border. New gloom for asylum hopefuls at the border. Court ruling falls most heavily on Hondurans and Guatemalans. A new level of despair spread among the thousands of migrants waiting to the Mexico border to seek refuge in the United States as the Trump administration has begun enforcing radical new restrictions on who qualifies for asylum. Keith goes to the border on a very regular basis. What do we know about these people that are kind of stacked up along the border waiting for any kind of means by which to have their, obviously, adjudication of asylum request made, but nothing's happening for them and probably won't for many, many months, perhaps even years. What's going on at the border with Mexico, and what happens to these people? What kind of treatment do they receive? What kind of facilities do they have made available to be able to live there until they're heard by the United States government?
Keith Rosenblum,
yep.
Just not too worried about the whole situation.
Really?
Okay. Keith Rosenblum sees every day as he goes to Nogales, as he was in Mexicali, as he goes to Juarez and as he goes other places, he sees the Central Americans adapting, the ones that now haven't been snagged at the southern border by the Guardia Nacional, the new Mexican National Police Force, and have made it north, can actually get a job and can take advantage of Mexican wages that are higher than most Honduran, Salvadoran, or Guatemalan wages. And there's reasonable. It's not exactly, if I could compare it to Tucson, it's not like going up to the Tucson Country Club Estates. It's not, or living in one of the nicer districts of the city. It's more, if you'll allow me, more like South Tucson or a couple other places in the city. But bearable, and that's what happens when you have these types of migrations. It's not an issue. I hate to say this, it's just not that big of an issue on the Mexican radar. It's not a very big issue on my radar. And I see it as being, I see the all these things happening at once, the wall, the immigration issues, the legalization of drugs in the U.S. Curiously, the opiates issue, a lot of these just kind of somehow fit in to the into a kind of a rarefied 2019 environment that you just don't know what's going to come next. I think that border probably never would have been an issue had President Trump not made it into what it was, and for us to have established the, whatever it's called, the Bureau of, within Department of State, the Bureau of Protection or something like that for crimes committed by foreign nationals in the U.S. Something really weird like that, or undocumented workers in the U.S. Anyway, not an issue on many people's radar there. And from everything that I see, Mexico continues to be a remarkably strong, vital player on the world stage, peaceful. It has its drug problems. It has its other types of security problems. It does not have mass shootings, I might add. It does not have that issue on. It's when we talk about Mexico, the problematic of Mexico, we kind of pick and choose on these things that that we are worried about because we are a kind of a chicken little people. But in the scheme of things, to me, are pretty minor.
Well, I ask you a little bit about the wall. I mean, we are going to see, I guess, 60 miles of wall being built by the Trump administration from, I guess, from the military money that would be spent all over the world and many places here in the United States. Is that going to make any difference? I mean, does anybody believe the wall is going to stop people from coming if they want to get here? I mean, does anybody believe that? Anybody?
I don't believe there is anyone. I believe we'll just see new ways of getting over a wall. I believe we're getting probably more interestingly. I would love to do a story, which I haven't done yet, but I'd love to do a story on how you measure ground movement, because it's a matter of time before if you can build a channel between England and France, and I'm sorry, a channel. If you can build a tunnel, you can certainly build tunnels under that probably avoid detection under the border soil as well, or under the Rio Grande as well. That's actually something I want to learn about. I don't know enough about it right now, so I'm not really talking with any authority on that. But let me tell you a couple other aspects of Mexico that would give you cause to be optimistic. And let me also give myself some applause.
Be my guest.
Spoken. Okay, that might take somewhere between either 3/10 of a second or 3 hours.
All right.
But when we spoke a couple of months ago, I told you that I'd been sent to look for the expert on composites in Mexico. Because Nogales had an opportunity to bring a composite, a fiber carbon plant to the city. I'm talking about Nogales, Mexico, obviously. And we went hunting for the right person. And not only did we find him, and did I make several trips to Calexico to bring him to back to Nogales, but he is now employed. And Nogales, Sonora, now has a really unique opportunity, which is to begin to incubate a composite metals or composite plastics industry, which is something that she's never had. Composites are used by Bombardier, by Airbus, by Boeing, by everybody. In particular, the reason we were looking for them in the first place was because we were looking for a plant that is a company considering doing carbon fiber manufacturing of bicycles. But I bring this to your attention because remember that in whenever we are, September 2019, we had a conversation about composites because these types of things can grow very quickly. And the gentleman who's going to head the program is the guy who would urge you to have him on the program at some point. His name is Arturo Medrano, and he is a find. He is a graduate of Tec de Monterrey, early 40s. He has high, I don't think he has the maximum, but he has one of the highest levels of clearance in our Department of Defense. He has friends who are U.S. generals, and this is a guy who was working between Mexicali and Querétaro in the south, working on other composite projects. And the mayor of Nogales, Jesus Puyol, was able to sit down with him, hammer something out. He's also going to head, that is, Arturo is also going to head the industrial park of Nogales and probably be knocking on doors both in, throughout Arizona, but in particular in Tucson. Looking at what's going on in composites today in Arizona, and how can we make things mesh with a Mexican workforce as well? Nogales, Mexico has never had.
Explain to me what composites are. I'm not sure what I don't understand composites.
Okay.
Tell me, please.
What kind of bicycle does John Scott have? Tell me what kind of bicycle.
Well, I don't have a bicycle now. I used to have a bicycle.
If you had one, you would have had a Schwinn, correct?
I would have had a Schwinn Flyer, yes.
And if you tried to pick it up, when you went to pick it up,
yes.
A man of your feeble age would have probably needed help.
Probably.
It would have been 100 pounds.
If the bike had fallen over, I wouldn't have been able to get it up. So, you know.
It would have crushed you and, correct,
yeah,
we'd be having a conversation in urgent care.
Yeah.
But composites, which are replacing metal at every turn, are actually tougher than metal and weigh nothing. You could actually, that same bike that I'm describing as a Titan or a Santa Cruz or several of these other brands, you could take your pinky and pick it up. And
so John, in his feeble state at the moment, could actually get his bike up if it fell over.
Yeah, correct.
Wow.
And not only that, you'd be shocked because you could carry that bike around all day and forget that you were carrying it with you. How's that?
Well, so I'd forget a lot of things. I might not forget that. But.
And that's why, the aviation world, if you go to the airport, you see all the other things that have been done in aviation with the flaps that turn upward. Among the material, the things that have been changing are metal, and in automobiles as well. You know, now when you dent a fender, it's very rare for that fender to be metallic. It's more likely out of fiberglass or some kind of composite. That's what it is. And its use is across the board. If you go to a, if you buy a boat that used to be made of metal or have metal content or wood, today it would be carbon fiber or would be other composites, and it would weigh next to nothing. It saves a huge amount of fuel. As I say, it's tougher than the metal itself, and that's what makes it so remarkable. There's only four or five manufacturers in the world. Mitsubishi, I believe, is one of them. I don't think any are in the U.S., as a matter of fact. And but it has to be done under the... they're using drones, for example, to keep the drones up as long as you possibly can. If you have a heavy drone, guess what? It ain't going very far very long. If you have a drone made from composites, it'll stay up all day. It's almost like, you know, like a helium balloon. So that's what the industry will be. And this guy, Arturo Medrano, who I had the pleasure of getting to know over the last couple of months while they've been courting him, is just the greatest guy, and hopefully he becomes the daddy of an industry that doesn't exist today at all in Nogales, Mexico.
So these composites will be produced in Nogales, sold worldwide, right?
They will not be produced in Nogales. The composite material is sent, the raw material is sent by one of the four or five manufacturing plants in the world.
Right.
And it is then molded. I'm not sure of my terminology, but it is then used to create the end product, whether it's a boat, you know, a yacht, whether it's a bicycle, whether it's a drone, whether it's part for a Airbus or a Boeing plane, that will be done in Nogales. It's taking place now. As I say, there are two Mexican clusters right now. One is Mexicali, and the other is Querétaro.
Wow.
It does take place there right now, but Nogales will be the first. This will be the first time Nogales has had a shot at it. There's nobody yet there. But they hired Arturo in order to both have somebody to run the industrial park, plus to, with a name like his, to go forage for jobs in that line of work in composites.
You facilitated this, right?
I did that, and that's why I hunted him. It was actually like being a reporter. I got to go figure out who are the handful of people in Mexico that are revered. What are they doing right now? Can we lure them away from somewhere? What will they charge? And do they care about helping Nogales launch something? And the answer was yes, and the timing was just right. And Nogales had a bunch of money. There's a backstory to the Nogales thing, and that is that 50 years ago, the Campbell family of Nogales, Arizona, Dick Campbell, who's now deceased, his son Dick, who's retired, and the younger son. But anyway, the elder Mr. Campbell began what was called the Parque Industrial de Nogales, the industrial park of Nogales. It was one of the first maquiladora ever. It was the first one. And it was done during, I believe it would have been the Echeverria administration. And what they said was, hey, Mexico needs to be manufacturing. And even though we won't sell the product in Mexico, we will go ahead and allow you to assemble. And we'll only charge when the goods are assembled in Mexico. They can be then, you know, re-exported to the U.S., to Canada, to Europe, whatever. And the only duty you'll pay on that will be the value added. So you pay, you know, if the labor was $10 for the day, you might pay a small percentage on the value that was added to the product. So it might be like 50 cents or 30 cents or something. So anyway, it was the pilot project, what became the entire maquiladora industry along the border, which eventually had 2,000 or 3,000 or 4,000 companies. For example, Chamberlain, which makes all the garage door openers almost, I think, in the world, has 4,000 employees in Nogales. What is the name of that company? Amphenol has several thousand workers in Nogales. They do, I believe, medical instruments. All of them came in at one point or another under the Maquiladora program. Anyway, this was the year after 50 years that the industrial park reverted to ownership of the city of Nogales, Mexico. In the meantime, it has produced under a kind of a concession arrangement. It's produced like $120,000 a year. I'm sorry, $120,000 a month for Nogales, Mexico, as it received a share of the rents. But this month, actually in a day or two, I guess, the city of Nogales takes ownership of the industrial park. And that's one of the things that Arturo Medrano will be doing, is overseeing the industrial park and hopefully beefing up the revenues to Nogales, Mexico. It's really unusual because it is a... is a governmental entity run as a parastate, as a private sector company. Isn't
wow.
that cool?
That's pretty amazing.
It's something very different than what we know. It's like, think of, you know what the model would be, John? The model is what the city of Green Bay is to the Green Bay Packers.
No,
no city manager of Green Bay is deciding who is going to be starting at quarterback for the Packers. But the city of Green Bay owns and has, I guess, shares, I'm not really sure, in the Packers, and that is the same arrangement here. The city of Nogales, Mexico, owns the industrial park, which has several thousand workers in it, but the company, for obvious reasons, has to be run as a private sector entity, and that's what Arturo will be doing.
Well, I insist you keep us apprised of what's happening there as that unfolds. That's an amazing story. That's a great story. And
you know what? You know, John, it's untold. I'm so tired of, with all due respect, or not due respect, I'm so tired of the wall. I'm so tired of Central Americans. Not that they're not nice people and legitimate story makers. I'm just tired of the other wall. I'm just tired of those issues. You know, it just allows us to continue our condescension and our maintain our superiority complex. And aren't those Mexicans or goofy people, or aren't those Central Americans or goofy people? It's horrendous that we're even having those that kind of dialogue. I figure one of my part-time jobs, unpaid, is to tell people, get a life. Get that sense of piety out of your sense and watch what's happening in Mexico. It's an amazing thing happening now, and I continue to be more optimistic about that country than I am about my own, and I continue to marvel at a generation now, a second generation of engineers and biomedical people and all sorts of really sophisticated work that's taking place right next door to us.
Keith Rosenbloom, thanks for being on our show today. We'll have you back. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks for having me.
It's great talking with you. He's covered Mexico for 30 years, and that's what he's been up to. And that's an amazing story. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Show. There's a campaign for mayor. It's well underway. Independent candidate Ed Ackerley is challenged by the Democratic nominee for mayor of Tucson, Ward 1 Councilwoman Regina Romero. And push has come to shove as ballots will be going out in the mail very soon. Here is Ed Ackerley, independent candidate for mayor. Ed, you qualified for matching funds. You've moved this campaign from a starting point to a very, very, I think, effective finish.
Good morning or good afternoon, John. Yes, we're excited about where we are. We're sprinting to the finish line here, and we're excited because we've got our matching funds, and we're going to make this a competitive race.
I think you are. By the way, a lot of people are saying, you know, we're very worried about Tucson turning to the left. This is not a stock car race where you keep turning to the left to win. You keep turning to the left in Tucson, you're going to go off-road. And I think a lot of people are concerned about that. Talk about the politics of this race, if you will, left and right.
Well, I think that what people are seeing over the last 12 years, the city has gone a little bit to the left, or maybe some would say a lot to the left. And even in the mayoral race, we're talking, some of the candidates are talking about some issues which are, you know, they're important social issues, they're important federal and national issues, but I've been talking about what's important to a mayor and council, which are the charter issues of public safety, transportation, economic development, and parks. And, you know, I was with the mayor the other day, and he even said to me, you know, those are the things that a mayor needs to look at, are the things that are we're responsible for by the charter, not by these extraneous things that are, you know, basically national in scope. Some of them are state in scope and aren't really under the purview of the mayor and council. So I've been focusing our campaign on those critical municipal issues.
Yeah, you know, this is a campaign. I think it's going to come down to, obviously, the reality of so many more Democrats than there are independents. But it's not just independents voting in this race. You have Republicans. There is no Republican candidate. You have independents, which is a very large portion of the registered voters in Tucson. It's not as one-sided as it might seem. Talk about the challenges of the demographics of this campaign of 2019, please.
Well, I think that we are in a situation where we have a pretty clear choice for the future, and that is whether we want 12 more years of, four more years of the last 12 years, which has been, you know, moving our city a little bit to the left, talking about things and making decrees about federal issues and writing letters to the federal government and to the state government and kind of being involved in that national scene politics. And I think what the city of Tucson residents want is more of a focus on what we really should be working on, which are coming together as a community to solve some of these lingering problems that have, you know, just what they seem like they just keep continuing and continuing. And, you know, one in particular is our staffing of police. We're down to about 775, 763 might be the number of certified officers which are employed by the city of Tucson now. And, you know, some just a few short years ago, we were up over 1,200. And, you know, we can't continue to continually go down in the number of police officers and expect our city to be safe. So that's just one of the issues that I think that the current, you know, electorate is looking at is, yeah, it's important for us to be engaged nationally and statewide, but let's come together and fix these issues. So whether you're a Democrat or an independent or a Republican, you know, a pothole doesn't have a political party. A clean and safe park doesn't have a political party. And the number of police officers and fire doesn't have a political party. We're all in this together. Let's solve these problems and let's get some dedicated funding aimed at these municipal issues, which are so important to the vitality of our economy and of our community.
You know, I had an interesting conversation with Pamela Powers Hanley, the state lawmaker from Legislative District 9, about trying to find out about the tax incentives that the city of Tucson is using when people start building, not only within the inner city, but throughout the community. And she was saying how impossible it is to find out where the agenda is and how many millions of dollars may be involved in these tax incentives. You know, there is, I think, a remarkable demand on the part of every Tucsonan that the business of the public be conducted in public. And you just can't be too transparent. And we're not enough transparent with the city of Tucson when it comes to a great many of the business deals the city's involved in. And they're worth millions and millions of tax dollars. And it's the right of the public to know where this money's going and how effective it can be used to enhance the quality of life in our town. I just think that's, I would hope you'd be committed to an open government and an open process when it comes to the people's money.
I certainly am, and I was recently in the city manager's office and had that exact discussion with him about, you know, where the money goes and how the budget is allocated so that the money that's dedicated to the specific services is and core services is delivered. And, you know, I have a lot of confidence in our city manager. I think he has been doing a good job. He has received a lot of criticism for the transparency, but, you know, he basically shared with me that, you know, it's all there. All of the money that has come in is there in the budget. And he said the books are open and anybody that wants to have a tutorial on where the money goes. What has happened, which I think is a little bit concerning to some folks, is that in order to make the budget more manageable, some labeling of some of the funds and labeling of where they are and where they go has changed over the years. And so there's a little mismatch, perhaps, in where the money maybe a decade ago, where it was going and what it's called now and where it's going now. And I think that's some of the confusion. So you're correct. Transparency and authenticity in that regard is so vital that we make sure that people who are the taxpayers know where their money's going. But I have every confidence under my administration that we will be forthright with all spending and it's going to be an open book. I don't want to hide anything. I want to be as transparent and as authentic as possible because that's what I've been telling people I will do, and that's what I'm going to do when I'm mayor.
Seems like the city of Tucson is struggling with what to do about recycling. We're losing millions of dollars. There does not seem to be a marketplace for our recyclable items, and there's problems about the purity of some of the recycling products that we want to provide. What's the solution to this? We're going to lose a lot of money here before this is all said and done. We've changed the way we pick up recycled goods by every other week rather than weekly, and I'm not even sure what happens to those recyclable goods. What's the solution?
Education. I think we have a great model in how our citizens can work to help us solve this problem. We need to look no further than the Beat the Peak program of a few decades ago that lasted for several decades. We still have it in some ways. The city of Tucson was asked to step to the plate, the citizens, to let's conserve water, and we have done a great job. We have moved from over 120 acre feet per water to 60 per per household, and that's, you know, that's cutting it in half basically. And that came about because we said, here is the problem, here's how you can help solve the problem. So yards were torn up and natural vegetation was put in, and low flow toilets and all sorts of different ways that citizens got involved. And that made a huge difference in our water consumption in the city of Tucson. I believe that the recycling program would be the same thing. We need to tell people to cut back on waste and cut back on the recyclables that they're discarding into the blue barrels, and give them a game plan for how they might help and contribute in this. Secondarily, I think that we can solve two problems at the same time. One is to take a harder look at how plastics can be used in asphalt. This is being done around the world, and there are a lot of studies that the plastic is helping the asphalt adhere, especially in a climate like ours where we have the intense heat and the rains that come and underwash the asphalt. The plastic has been shown to help give us about a 10-year extra life cycle on the asphalt. This is important to us because we can take some of those plastics and put them into the asphalt and recycle that plastic that way. And it is a little bit more expensive, and about 10 to 15% of our asphalt currently is being administered does have some plastic in it, but we can do a lot more of it. So those are two things that we can do right away. Education and introduce plastic into the asphalt are two things that we can do immediately to help us alleviate this terrible problem. But let me just say that recyclables and the whole recycling thing is not going to be a magic wand that we're going to be able to solve in my first 20 days in office. This is a long-term problem, not only for us, but for the nation and for other municipalities. We've just got to work with the U of A and other folks who are working on environmental things to make sure that we're doing the very best effort we can to solve this problem.
I believe if your opponent wins the mayor's office, that she will, in fact, reverse her stand on sanctuary cities, as does our mentor, Raul Grijalva, feel that we ought to have a sanctuary city status. Most people throughout the community are saying this would be a really very bad move for us. It would not solve any of the problems, but would create many for the city of Tucson. And I think, too, that she would move toward a $15 minimum wage. Talk about Tucson as a sanctuary city and the $15 minimum wage.
I believe those things are tied together. They are about the economy. The sanctuary cities designation, both in the program of this initiative that is being up for the voters here coming up in the next cycle, you know, that is a bad idea for the city of Tucson on a number of grounds, law enforcement, but most importantly, it does set a economic roadblock for us in terms of state shared revenue, as well as people coming to Tucson to spend money and be tourists and build businesses. So that's an economic issue. And if we raise the minimum wage to $15, the effect of that is short-term, yes, for workers might be good, but the long-term hit on the economy in Tucson, some of our businesses just can't afford to do that, especially right now. They've been hit once already with that increase, and they've, along with the other things that the state has put in place that are really costing small business owners a lot of money. These are two ideas that I think we don't need to implement those right now in order to be successful economically. As a matter of fact, those two things would be a detriment to the long-term success of our economy. We just are fragile right now after the recession and after the downturn. We can't do those kinds of things that are going to take a couple steps backwards. We've got to make sure that we have high-paying jobs from companies that have a high wage, not just take all wages and lift them. We need to get better economic development so that we can get some companies in here that are paying higher wages. That's the solution, not just across the board raising that minimum wage.
Take about 2 minutes and tell people why they ought to vote for you, Ed Ackerley.
Leadership is one of the most important things. I think if you talk, I have talked to all the department heads of all of the departments in the city of Tucson. Certainly they want money and certainly they need resources, but what they're looking for is leadership from the council and, of course, continued leadership from the city manager. I bring a lifetime of experience in leadership. I have a degree in leadership. I have helped numerous businesses and nonprofits over the years in leadership development and so forth. I will bring to the council a unique perspective on how to bring people together and have them help us solve these problems. You know, this is not about the council solving all the problems that we have before us. It's about getting the people who live here, people who come to our town, the people who pay taxes here, coming together to solve these problems as a community. That's why my slogan is jump in. I'm jumping in to give my leadership and expertise in marketing and my leadership in terms of how to get a diverse group of people to come together and solve problems. But I also need voters to jump in and residents to jump in and say, how can I be part of the solution here? Government cannot solve everyone's problems all the time. We have to do this as a community, and so that's a unique thing that I bring to the table is my ability to bring people together to solve problems. And so leadership and problem solving are important. Thirdly, I would just say that perspective. You know, we have been leaning left, and the council is 7-0 Democrat right now. Even a third grader would tell you that a perspective from the other side might be important. And I'm an independent running not as a Democrat or a Republican, but I'm running as a Tucsonan trying to solve these problems. And I think that perspective alone would be a powerful thing to have in the mayor's position, to have somebody who has kind of a broad scope view of the future, looking at the 50 years down the line. What are we going to be? What is Tucson going to be 50 years from now? So for those three reasons, I would ask people to consider voting for me.
How do they help you get elected mayor of this town, Ed Ackley?
Well, we're so proud that we have gotten the go-ahead from the city on the matching funds. It was one of the hardest things that we've had to do is jump over that high hurdle. So we've collected all the $10 checks that we need to qualify for matching funds. Now, whatever the amount someone gives us is matched dollar for dollar up to $500 per individual, and that can come from any U.S. citizen. So we are out now working. We are walking neighborhoods this morning. We're out giving our voters the chance to meet me and the chance to understand what's going on. But they can come to my website at ackerleyformayor.com and make a contribution of any size up to $500, and that will be matched. And they can also give me a call. My phone number is 520-850-7058. I'm happy to speak with anyone at any time about my plans for the future of Tucson.
Ed Ackley, thanks for being on the show. We truly appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John.
We want to thank Jeff Rogers, former chair of the Democratic Party, for being on our show today. We want to thank Dimitri Downing, a lawyer for the pot industry. Larry Bodine, blog for Arizona, the progressive blog in Arizona, was our guest. Pamela Powers Hanley, State Representative District 9, had a conversation with us. And Keith Rosenblum from Mexico gave us a look at the border. Ed Ackerley, independent candidate for mayor as well. Have a great evening. Thanks for listening to the John C. Scott Show.